Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Yes. What is up, everybody? And welcome to Mia Hamm's favorite podcast in soccer, we trust. I'm Jimmy Cream Cheese Conrad, alongside my two usual suspects, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies and Hollywood Heath Pearson. On today's show, we're going to talk about Wayne Rooney's return to the States with DC United. I did not see that coming, everyone. Luis Suarez potentially following Gareth Bale's lead to come to MLS as well. And some crazy results overall on a big rivalry week in our domestic league and how some of our players in the U.S. Men's National Team player pool fared in those crazy-ass games. But first, before I start with a big question for my two friends here in Heath, I'm going to put you in the hot seat first. So fasten your seatbelt now, my friend. I have to let you know that we are a nominee for the best sports podcast category in the People's Choice Podcast Awards, which is truly amazing. And we hope that you'll take the 60 seconds needed to go to podcastawards.com/app/signup and then toggle down the sports category. Find In Soccer We Trust. Hit that and help us win another trophy in our careers, because I definitely needed more trophies. I don't feel like I won as many as I should. We've also included the link at the top of the episode description as well. Okay. Question time. So Heath, I'm coming to you first. Now, whatever you think of MLS, everybody, love it, hate it, indifferent to it, whatever. Do you think our national team would be as good if it didn't exist?
Wait, what?
Like, do you think our national team, how important do you think MLS has been to the development of players and then how that feeds into the national team? Because we're going to be talking MLS a lot today, and I just wanted to have a little bit of some context about how important the league has been to the infrastructure that's being built. Now, obviously, there's been mistakes made, and there's going to be mistakes made moving forward. I think that's part of the league growing and trying to compete in a lot of different ways with foreign leagues, but also the other sports leagues in this country. Yeah. So there has to be some risks that are taken to try to catch up in a lot of different ways, both on and off the field. Yeah. But I guess I'm trying to extrapolate, and I can't wait to hear from Charlie as well on this. If there was no domestic league, though, but I'll start with you, Heath. There's no domestic league. Well, then I guess our players would just go over to Europe like they used to with Eric Winalda days and all that. And we could argue we'd probably still potentially have a pretty robust national team, but maybe we wouldn't. I mean, maybe we wouldn't be as strong. What do you say?
Yeah, no, I think for any country to have a dominant national team, you have to have a strong and fundamental domestic league. I think we're getting to that point. Now, MLS, because of its quirks and the way that it was built in single entity, has gone through a lot of these phases of creating these different mechanisms for player salaries, right? Allocation money, things like that, that I think has created the ebb and flow of the development of the American player. But without Major League Soccer, we are not a strong national team at all. Now, again, you go back to Bob's era, he wanted more players in Europe. Most of those players, though, were still starting their careers in Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm. Now you look at the players and you still have a large contingency in Europe. They're going earlier, or maybe you have a Gio Reyna who's in NYCFC. Now, okay, you could say that MLS in itself, but he's still in their system before he leaves. So I think 95% of success stories that we're going to see in the national team, both now and into the future, are going to have some sort of direct link to Major League Soccer. Might not be first team football, but it's going to be within their academies or some sort of infrastructure. And that sort of development of the league is, I think, the most important factor to our national team ever being a dominant force is the infrastructure that the league is providing beyond, again, the first team player. The first team player, I think, is still important in the national team, but the league in itself, I think, is the most important factor towards our national team being successful both now and into the future. That's my take.
Okay. No. And Charlie, I'm going to give you a little bit of a different angle on this. And I want you to answer the same thing I said from the start, but I want to make sure that there's some context here. By no means, I think, are we going to raise our hand and say that MLS is perfect. They have made some mistakes. We were all part of the union, the players union, and the collective bargaining agreement. And we wish in some ways they would take off the handcuffs and actually let these owners spend and just let it go, right? And let it grow in a way now where I think the stability is there. And that's why I think the single entity structure was in place to kind of counter the historical failures of developing a professional league here in the States for a number of years, NASL being the most obvious one that ended up folding in 83. And it took us, what, 15 years to get it going again. So I understand why those mechanisms were put in place, but at some point you'd like to think that there was a plan to evolve from that. And then now I feel like we're there. So, you know, but yeah, I guess you can kind of pick and choose. I just try to let everybody know that because everybody thinks we're MLS homers and to a certain extent, you know, I am, because that's my whole career was played in it, but I also see it for what it is and that it has room to grow and to continue to get better and to continue to strive. And I think that's all we want, is that they're looking towards that. The people that are making decisions are trying to work towards that. But go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a huge contribution to the development of the sport in this country. Initially, it was started off the heels of the 1994 World Cup because everyone saw how incredible the sport was. And for the I guess, vast majority of Americans, they didn't know about soccer. They didn't know what the power of the sport and how it brings people together and how easy it is to play. And I think when you talk about Major League Soccer in the early stages, it's entertainment. You're trying to get people to buy into the sport because you need to fund. You need to fund it. You need to fund bringing attractive players to the league. So you pull out all these different types of quirks. The 5-second dribble up. I mean, that was something I loved as a kid. But it allowed me to grow. It gives you visibility and something that you wouldn't have had you not had this league here. And then a lot of players, they got the opportunity to one, go to games, but then train with teams, be a part of the early MLS sides, and then make the move. Without MLS, our national team is not where it is today. That is a fact. And you look at it currently, a lot of these players, they started with the academies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they didn't play for an MLS side, but you can't tell me from maybe ages of 10 to 14 or 8 to 14, whatever it is, that they weren't involved with the MLS academies or, you know, being involved with these MLS sides, whether it's clinics, tournaments, camps, whatever it is. It has played a huge role in our country. So I'm with you, Jimmy. I've had the benefit of developing here, going to college, but then going to Europe and playing and pushing myself, but ultimately coming back to MLS. So I've seen it on both sides of the coin. It's an incredible league and it's only getting better. Of course, there's going to be some ups and downs, and a lot of people have hate because you hold the English Premier League and La Liga and the Bundesliga to a certain standard. And now you're starting to see more players from America go with those leagues because of what they're able to do here.
No, I appreciate both of you guys.
Jimmy,
go ahead, Heath.
Real quick, this is my thing about the arguments that we all face anytime that we protect or stand up for an MLS. And it's more usually the MLS player than it is the league, but we are called, or I am at least called, a shill for
propagandist.
MLS quite often.
No, yeah, propagandist.
A propagandist. And my question to anybody is, how did our national team get – how is the talent pool better now than it was before? And if you don't think that it's because of Major League Soccer, then it is just a generational group of talent, and we're going to go back to being not very good again, or average, or – I mean, I don't mean not very good, but I mean not competing to be one of the best in the world. But those same people are the ones talking about 2026 and 2030, and like we're going to win a World Cup soon. How are those players going to get better? Is it just because we've always had the most participation – in soccer at the youth level? We've always had the potential. We've always had the athletes. We've always had the raw material goods, but it's because of Major League Soccer and the academies and the development, of course, the national team and other things and other factors and other players of diverse backgrounds. But by and large, the success of that is going to be rooted in player development coming through Major League Soccer. USL can do the same. I think lower division has an important role in all those things, but the stability of Major League Soccer and the foundation of that is going to be what we go back to and look at as the single defining success as to why we have a higher quality of players playing at the biggest clubs in Europe and competing at the national team level for potentially trophies in the future.
And we got FC Dallas as a great example. They have a lot of players that have gone over to Europe from FC Dallas. We were championing a youth academy from Philadelphia Union for the U20s because four of their players starred as we qualified for the Olympics and the U20 World Cup recently. So yes, I mean, those are incredibly important. I'm just naming two. There's plenty of other academies that are contributing players at different levels and sending players over to Europe. And I think that's a good evolution that we're falling into. Now, I'm here in Minneapolis right now. I'm not at one of Chuck's many estates. He let me borrow a room. But I'm here in Minneapolis for the USA Cup, which is the biggest youth tournament in North America. And I'm the MC here. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're here, everybody, come say hi. But what I found interesting is I went and watched a couple teams yesterday play, and there was a U10 team from Chicago, and there's this one kid who's an absolute baller, just running it, his aggressiveness, his ideas, his off the ball running, fantastic. And I wonder, how do we keep tabs on that kid? Like, how do we keep an eye on what he's doing? And are we scouting at that level? Maybe not. But what was also interesting for me is I talked to some of the parents, talked to the coach, and one of their things, and this is kind of ties into the MLS conversation we're having, they're like, why are the Chicago Fire so bad? And that wouldn't have happened before, though. I mean, the fact that they're paying attention, the fact that they have, and this is really important for development as well, is that you go into a game live, seeing what these players are doing off the ball, seeing that, hey, I want to play in that league. I want to represent that team. And I think I can do what those guys are doing or maybe do it even better is incredibly important for the visualization part of the dream, right? You have a dream and now you can see it. It's tangible. It's in front of you. You can go to the games. And then from there, you can start to take bigger steps. And I think that was really vital to our development as well, as we got to watch games when we were younger. Now, I didn't have MLS to lean on. I'm a little bit older, as you guys know, but I went to UCLA games and Joe Max Moore was playing, Kobe Jones, Brad Friedel. So I was definitely part of or watching or witnessing some great talent that obviously went on to represent the U.S. at the highest levels. All right, now let's pivot to some big stories that are coming out of MLS. Charlie, I'm going to go to you first. Wayne Rooney is apparently returning, but not as a player. He's going to come back as a manager, $1 million a year around to be the manager of DC United, who are tied with the Chicago Fire as the worst team in MLS and are coming off a 7-0 ass-kicking to Philadelphia Union this past weekend. I didn't see this coming at all. Wayne Rooney spent 18 months with Derby. They're obviously in a crappy situation, got relegated from the championship into League One. I'm kind of thinking that Wayne Rooney is a masochist. He just likes pain. He likes suffering. And because this DC United job is not a pretty one. And they've been a bit of a mess for a little while now, haven't qualified for the playoffs since Wayne Rooney left in 2019, his last season. What is he doing? And how do you think he's going to do when he comes back? Because we even saw the great Thierry Henry when he came back to Montreal. And after leaving Monaco, he managed 29 games for Montreal, only won 9. So it's not a guarantee that if you're a great player, you're going to turn into a great manager.
Well, that's a fact. there's a number of things that I look at with this decision. Well, one, it can't get worse than what they have now. So that's one.
Sure. Nowhere else to go but up, everybody.
You can only go up because it is rock bottom. Now I think when you're looking at what Wayne Rooney has done in Major League Soccer, so he's come, he understands what goes into this league and some of the successful teams, what worked for DC United when he was there versus what didn't. I guess my questions would be around, he left his DC United contract early. This is desperate, right? This is desperate. He left his contract early because his family couldn't settle. He wanted to go back to England because his family felt better over there. So he goes to Derby County as a player and then transitions into manager. Now, he had some spurts while he was managing Derby County to say, man, we see a promise with Wayne Rooney as a manager. That he comes in and makes an immediate impact. But also we've seen him go through the too many changes in with the personnel and the shape and the tactics. And I think it was 14 games without a win. So you're not getting a proven manager whatsoever. And he hasn't had a number of years behind him to say, we want to back our future with Wayne Rooney. This is 100% a desperate hire. This is a panic hire. It just so happened that Wayne Rooney resigned from his management role and DC loses 7-0. I don't know when the initial contact happened. I'm sure they were in contact here and there since he's left, but it was probably like, hey, we're going to offer you the contract. That's it. There's no real negotiation here. It's just how much money would it take for you to come and manage? So I guess for DC United supporters' standpoint, it's is this a business decision for Wayne Rooney? Is this something just for, you know, a year or 2 years? Is there a long-term plan? What's the vision? What is his ambition? There's a lot that goes into it, and I don't think there's been many. We haven't had any answers to these questions, so I know it's better than what they have now, but if I'm a fan for DC United and I have a real love for the club, I'm not super excited about this.
Keith, I want to get your thoughts on this, because does Wayne Rooney need more money? Like, I feel like that guy's, did he blow it somewhere that we're unaware of? Has he got a gambling problem? I don't understand why he would come back and take this opportunity. Clearly it's a challenge in some capacity, but I thought that he left DC United because his family didn't like living in DC, didn't like living in the States. It didn't settle in. So maybe he just doesn't like hanging with his wife and kids. I don't know exactly what his personal motivation is to come back and try to be the salvation for DC United, because it doesn't look like they have much hope of making the playoffs this year. Now, they do have a couple players with Taxi Fontas and Ola Kamara. They're scoring goals.
But really, leave it at Taxi.
Okay, let's just say Taxi. But outside of that, I don't know how much he has to work with. I mean, I know that he knows a lot of those players still because he played with a few of them. Steve Birnbaum, the captain in particular. So Bill Hamid in goal, you know. But outside of that, I don't know. This is a really interesting hire for me. And maybe it's what, lipstick on a pig? Is that the phrase?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Charlie's sentiments. And it does feel desperate. The only thing that I will give him is Wayne Rooney was and his legendary status sort of faded early as a player, right? He was 16 and playing in Everton, and then kind of had the younger end of like a legendary career, and then sort of faded off at a younger age. But he's still only 36, I think he is. And I like the idea of take Wayne Rooney's name out of it, right? I like the idea of a young manager. I like the idea of somebody like that that could come in and put in the time. I like the idea of the fact that he spent his time at Derby County, which he helped them survive relegation 2021 and then ended up relegating in 21-22, which means he's had to go through tough times. And for somebody that came from a very polished sort of, not polished, I'm not speaking about his childhood, but a polished professional environment, you at least learn some things when you're going through difficult times. You go through adversity. I don't think he's a good manager for DC United. I don't think it makes a lot of sense. It's definitely desperate, but I'm trying to find some sort of what can Wayne Rooney bring
positive
to the table now?
Some sort of positivity.
Yeah. I'm trying. That's what I'm looking for now. Yeah. His network. He was a player in a situation where he was a very privileged player in a situation where he doesn't understand the mechanics of the way the league works with players and
Tam
budgets
and Gam
and yeah, like, you know, all those things. And I think is going to be a struggle, but I do like the fact that he started his career in a difficult situation as a manager. And he had to have learned a lot, even though you could quote unquote say he failed during that tenure. He had the success the year before, and then the eventual outcome a year later. I'm trying to see that there's something there of like a willingness to put in the work to learn. I'm not saying Wayne Rooney's going to come in and fix DC United now, but it seems like he's willing to grind and hustle and get his hands dirty, which I think you can't be said a lot about a lot of players, especially players of his level, to get into the professional coaching environment and be willing to do the same thing that they did as a player, starting from scratch, and then start to grind and grind and grind to build and develop. Because being a coach it's hard. No matter how natural you are, it is very challenging.
Now, Jacob has a good comment. It says, if you didn't watch Derby last season in the championship, Wayne Rooney had a team at rock bottom playing great soccer. It's a great move for DC United. But from some of the pundits,
he wants them not winning and being.
Well, I don't know.
They won like 17 games out of 50 something, and they finished 23rd out of 24th or 25th out of 26th.
I mean, they got 21 points deducted. All I'm going to say is that the pundits are saying that Wayne Rooney had the benefit of all these excuses. Well, we got docked 21 points. We got this. And they saying that it's really easy to motivate a team when everybody's against you, right? You're the underdog. Mm-hmm. You got nothing to lose, everything to gain. And they just don't
That's
think
tough,
that way.
Though.
I've been in relegation
and you can have all the excuses in the world. Yeah, you take a little bit of the pressure off, but like living with failure day to day in a locker room, knowing that whatever, like that's a tough motivation, because the easier thing is to just be like, what's the point of all this? You know, let's just chuck in the season and work on getting out of this club because it's in a crap situation. So I agree with on some level, but also
I'm just playing with house money is not easy
for 40 games.
No, I mean, would people feel the same way if DC United went out and got Jose Mourinho? I'm just throwing out these names. Sure. You know, I think if you said, hey, we're going to go invest in a coach that knows how to build and has kind of had experience building a club and having results, then maybe you say, hey, Pochettino. All right, we got Mauricio Pochettino. He just left PSG. He was fired at PSG, but he's had success. You know, right. Southampton, Tottenham. That you say, hey, all right, this feels good. This doesn't feel rushed either. The fact that this was so rushed and it feels so desperate, and it's not like they went through an interview process. It was, we're going to keep Chad Ashton as the interim manager till the end of the year, and then we'll start to assess, and probably throughout the year, we'll have conversations with people, but we're going to take the time. That was what they said. That's what they stated. The whole season, we're going to have Chad Ashton be the interim manager. That tells you right now that you have zero expectation to compete. You have thrown away the season. You're just going to basically say, hey, guys, we're okay with finishing last. We're going to take the time to get this right, this next hire. Then all of a sudden,
haven't they been doing that for 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, but you know that. They made a hire and it didn't go well, right? So you fire the manager. You probably shouldn't have kept him in the first place, and then fired him what, 3 months into the season or 2 months into the season? Yeah. So I think from that standpoint, there's no plan, there's no process. It's rushed. It's chaotic, and we're just saying we got thrashed 7-0. Let's make a hire. Let's get people excited because we're taking a beating. I just don't see the long-term vision with this. It's very short-sighted and a risk.
Obviously it's a risk worth taking in their standpoint. If he gets, well, I think it's been confirmed. I mean, if he gets $1 million a year, he'd be the highest paid coach in club's history. But what's interesting, what you guys brought up, his network. Now, there's a lot of rumors floating around that Luis Suarez might be heading to MLS. He has come out and said there's 5 or 6 offers from unnamed MLS teams. The 35-year-old striker is currently a free agent, as we like to call it here in the States, after leaving Atletico Madrid. Now, he scored 68 goals. He has scored 68 goals and 132 caps for Uruguay. He has a combined 336 goals and 182 assists across La Liga, the Premier League, the Eredivisie. I mean, the guy is no joke. He had 11 goals and 3 assists in 35 matches, probably a little bit below what we think he's capable of for Atleti last season. But the season before, when he made the move from Barcelona to Atleti, he helped Atleti win La Liga, which I thought was a nice middle finger moment for him, especially when Barcelona discarded him so casually. Now, what I find interesting about this Luis Suarez thing, there's been some rumors that Wayne Rooney's going to try to bring him to DC United. But I found this to be awesome. In an interview, Luis Suarez says, the market in MLS is very complex. Some clubs want you, but they don't have the slots, and so it would have to be for January. This is what Suarez said. This is crazy. Other clubs want you now, but I have to evaluate if they have a chance to qualify for the playoffs. I'm not closing the door to anyone. I've listened to all the offers, but if some MLS teams don't qualify for the playoffs, they end their season in the first week of October. And that's not useful for me because I would stop a month ahead of the World Cup, which wouldn't be good for me. How the hell does Luis Suarez know so much about MLS and GAM and TAM and all that stuff, Heath? I don't even really know what's happening, but I absolutely love that Luis Suarez is this informed about how the league works. If he means it about the playoffs, he's not going to DC United because they have no chance in hell.
What's so funny, though, is about the narrative of Gareth Bale coming was that it was a positive because you finished the season heading into a World Cup. You can have a good run of form, and then you're going into a World Cup into this situation. But for him, he's thinking about, obviously, you have to find the right club. But knowing that complexity, I think, is great. And I think that's also a testament to well, one, just the league growing and more information, more players coming and going back and sort of sharing the gospel, better or worse, of what it was like to play in the league and signing players and all those types of things for someone like him. But, I mean, he would be a huge asset for I think the league, and you think about a DC United, same thing. But if you're a player like him, you're kind of like, well, where's the upside for me, right? I can come, but like, because of the fact that the implications of not making a playoff in season one would mean literally that his season would end very, very early and has some ramifications for him. I think that's something you seriously have to consider. And then that limits you to teams that you know are most likely going to make it into the league. And do they have a slot available? And if they have a slot, do they have the ability to pay you what you want to go into that slot? Because there's a number of there's hundreds of players around the world that have names that we've heard of that are constantly trying to get into three or four markets in MLS. And it's just not possible anymore for those players unless they can be an instant contributor or work around the Kelleher Bale deal where they're non-DPs and you leave those slots open.
Jimmy, if you were to guess, where would be the best fit for a Luis Suarez in MLS right now?
I mean, probably the teams that need a little bit of punch up top and maybe have a little defensive thing, right?
It wouldn't be.
It's like, what, 18 months? I bet you get him, you get him for 6 months this year. And you got to win now. That's tough. I mean, when you look at New York Red Bulls right now are on top of the Eastern Conference. Do they need him? They seem to rely heavily on younger players. They could use him. But
I mean, if you want to win now with this group, Suarez, I mean, the thing is Suarez finished the year, right? Not too many starts to finish the year. And there could be a number of reasons. His last like real contribution was two goals against Alaves on April 2nd. And he played 29 minutes in that game. And then if you go back for a 90-minute game, it's February 6th against his former club, Barca, goal and assist. And, of course, that's the motivation playing against your old club.
Right.
But, you know, of the last, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 matches, he had just three starts, 45 minutes, 70 minutes.
Good. That means his legs are fresh.
Yeah. So I would say you need to play – in a system that will suit him where he's not going to have to be doing a ton of running. This is a player that you just want to finish. Red Bulls play that high aggressive intense system where he's going to be closer to goal. That would be a home run for me or a replacement for Tati Castellanos.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Because NYCFC, Tati Castellanos just came out in an interview after their game against New England saying that he wants to leave. He's ready to go to Europe. And they have 37 goals in 18 games. So to your point, Charlie, if Castellanos left, Suarez could kind of slot into a team that's already creating a lot of chances. And obviously, we know that Suarez is capable of finishing a lot of those chances. Orlando's an interesting one for me. Only 24 goals for in 19 games. So they're clearly not doing a lot on the offensive side of the ball and making things difficult. But they're fifth. They're currently in a playoff spot. So I wonder what he looks at that. Yeah, obviously, he's probably talked to Phil Neville in Miami, David Beckham. They've only got 18 goals in 18 games. I wonder if he would take that. They already got Gonzalo Higuain, so I don't know. And Campana's really come around up top.
Austin would
I don't
be
know
awesome.
Austin would be great, but they're kind of cruising. Cecilia,
but
I don't know.
You look at Cecilio Dominguez, and he's been out for a while. So is there a way to get him into the squad? And I mean, if you look at what they've been able to do with Maxi Arruti, who's largely a solid contributor, not really a game changer. If you were to get Luis Suarez in that squad,
they're averaging 2 goals a game right now, Austin FC. And so to your point again, they're creating chances. So yeah, you're right. Would he go to Austin though? I mean, to Heath's point, maybe that's not a market that Luis Suarez really wants to entertain. I feel like it's going to be on one of the coasts. So maybe the Galaxy comes in. They're obviously been a destination for big names, and Douglas Costa hasn't really worked out. Yeah, I mean, they got to get rid of Cabral or you know, they're trying to, you know, Chicharito and Suarez. That would be interesting. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they'd have to do something with one of their other DPs. They want to win now. I don't know.
Wouldn't you say the days of having to choose only a coast are gone in Major League Soccer? Because if you're looking at the league, it used to be, I'm only going to LA, I'm only going to New York. And then Miami came in, you're like, all right, I'd go to Miami. But I feel right now, the way Major League Soccer has grown, and you talk about the new stadium, Cincinnati, even though Charlotte is in a football stadium, it seems like everyone in the city is pumped around Charlotte. And I feel like it's a good vibe. You throw in Nashville and their new stadium, Columbus Crew and their new stadium. I just feel that it's not so much east-west, it's who has the best package? Who's going to be, you know, the most convincing? Chicago Fire is another club, horrible, but could use a big name like Suarez. And maybe that could be a perfect destination, but they'd have to make some moves. And Kasper Schmelke, they spent a lot of money to acquire him. Charlotte, I see Charlotte people saying, I mean, who wouldn't want Luis Suarez in the short term? He probably doesn't have too many years left at this level, because it is a very fast and aggressive, pacey type of league now. But I mean, it's great that he's talking about the league. You talk about Major League Soccer.
And he knows the details. So, so Heath, you're our kind of resident LAFC insider, since you help work with the club at times. They have a slot. A DP slot, because Bale and Chiellini somehow don't hit the cap in that way. I think they will.
That would be stupid. That would be.
I mean, you'd have Suarez, Carlos Vela, Bale as your front three.
Yeah, there's a discussion right now, just generally, because John Thorington was in Europe, and I don't think it was on vacation in the middle of the season for a very short stint. And you know, there was the discussion of Rashford for both the Galaxy and LAFC, both saying they weren't gonna fight or negotiate against each other for a player. But when you think about that, there's rumors of them trying to move Chicho Arango, who, by the way, last year set records for the club in his arrival, but just hasn't found a way to. I mean, he had a good match when he was in against the Galaxy, but generally they've got a slot open, and I don't think they're going to be taking that. And on the defensive side, though, I do think they need some defensive help. That would make that would be unbelievable to be able to do that. And again, you're kind of. What we're seeing right now, theme-wise, from LAFC is just sort of hedging their bets with Chiellini, with Bale, just kind of throwing everything at the core team that they have now, trying to see if they can get the most out of these arrival players, and then get the most while you still have your 18 months left with Carlos Vela. So that would be an unbelievable opportunity, and something that I would say is a better move than a Rashford would be, in terms of like that 18-month deal based on this timeline of this team. Because they've kind of moved away from what they were building and are now going for like, okay, we've had our supporter shields. We're an attractive team. We're a big club. But now we need to go and win MLS Cup. And I think that could be a huge addition to that. And somebody that you could work in pretty quickly into the style of play makes a ton of sense. It's just always like when you add a player like that to a club that they already have, you start to go, there's no way they can make that happen. But they actually could financially make that happen.
Now, Charlie, I'll come to you, and I'm asking everybody that's watching right now, or hit us up on Twitter if you're listening to this later, ISWT pod on the Twitter. If Suarez went to LAFC and had Bale on one side of him and Vela on the other, would that be the best front three in MLS history?
Yes, without a doubt. You're not even close. Are you kidding me?
I just wanted to put my flag in the ground.
like he said, if you're looking at LAFC, you want a strong spine. And what they did with Maxime Crépeau as the goalkeeper is massive. That was the game changer, because they found a way to give up silly goals. And when you bring in a stable, consistent goalkeeper, that just brings confidence to the squad, especially the back line, which I think really need to improve. Now, Chiellini is also a short-term fix. You don't know if he's going to give you world-class performances and Champions League performances, or have that real adjustment period of, whoa, this league.
Yeah, and they play a high line too. LAFC are, you know, and they get exposed by the players they have now. So Chiellini couldn't be much worse than that. But you talk about a guy who's got some miles on his legs playing a high line. I've seen Chiellini when he plays a high line, and that worries me, but he could be fantastic also. He's smart.
Right. If he reads the game super well and can put fires out before they happen, which I think he's doing a good job of, already trying to coach this group. But I mean, I guess you give John Thorington so much credit for being able to put this together, because without a mastermind in terms of, okay, this is the flexibility I have, and how can we allocate certain funds here? How can we buy this contract down? TAM here, TAM there, DP here, DP here. To have Gareth Bale already, Chiellini and Vela in your squad, and still have one DP spot open, wow. If you flip Chicho Arango for an incredible trade, and he's probably worth, in terms of GAM, TAM, whatever you would like to use, probably
two, and ham.
$2 million, 2.5,
yeah,
three. Mm-hmm. And then you sign a DP, and you have all of that ready to kind of fire for the next season. It would be an incredible coup if he was able to do that. But I don't think LAFC needs Suarez. That's another probably point.
If that happens, we are definitely going to push for Steve Cherundolo to get on the podcast because we just want to see him with the biggest smile he's ever going to have.
Yeah, by the way, Jimmy, he did say that like Carlos Vela is currently the false nine for them in the way that in the squad that they have, but it's something that will have to change. It's essentially what he was saying is somebody's coming in into that spot. They're going to have to move Arango out and somebody's going to come in to move Vela back out onto the wing. So I don't know if it could be Suarez, but I know it's somebody and it's somebody big that they're going to bring in.
Wow. That will be unbelievable if that actually goes down. Some of the biggest moves, I think, in MLS.
Jesse Lingard, right?
Jesse Lingard's another. I mean, there's options out there, and you have an appetite from some top players that want to come over and see what it's all about, especially with this Winter World Cup, which I think makes MLS more desirable than ever. All right, we're going to take our first and only break. When we return, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the big results, rivalry week in MLS, including Atlanta United, who might be called Dumpster United at this point, because it's not looking good for Joseph Martinez and manager Gonzalo Pineda. So do not go anywhere.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, everybody, to In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Chuckwagon Davies and Hollywood Heath Pierce. And if you're a fan of In Soccer We Trust, outside of following us on the Twitter at ISWT Pod, make sure that you take 60 seconds to nominate us for the 2022 Podcast Awards. Check us out in the sports category. That would be fantastic. We're trying to add more trophies to our cabinet so we can have more than Tottenham Hotspur. I don't know why they always jump to mind when I think about people that just always trip up at the finish line, but they're always at the tip of my tongue. All right, so rivalry weekend happened this past week in MLS. Some cracking games. Let me give you some big scores. The Timbers go to Seattle, win 3-0. That is pretty ridiculous. Congratulations to them. They needed that because I felt like they were under a little bit of pressure for maybe not performing as well as they should. LAFC beat the Galaxy in El Trafico 3-2. Cifuentes had a brace. He was my man of the match. We had NYCFC controversially beating New England Revolution. Bruce Arena, I don't think, is still happy. Probably won't be happy for a while. 3 penalties were called in 1 half. We have Austin FC beating Atlanta United. We'll get into that game a little bit, but that's a pretty big win for Austin, who have now won 4 straight away from home. Charlotte FC taking care of Nashville pretty easily, 4-1. You had Sporting Kansas City getting a big road win. I think maybe their first of the season against Montreal, 2-1. Toronto and the Earthquakes, 2-2. I don't know how much of that is a rivalry. Columbus Crew coming back from 2 goals down to beat the Chicago Fire, who are a dumpster fire as well. They are 3-2 right now. Houston Dynamo, FC Dallas, fantastic game. Got equalized 2-2 at the very end. Very good.
By who?
Salt Lake, Colorado Rapids, 2-2 as well. So the Dynamo scored very late in that one. Dallas had gone up 2-1. And at the very, very end, Teenage Hadebe scored in the 100th minute of extra time. Brandon Cervania, one of our youth national team players, got a red card. Got 2 yellows in extra time to get thrown out. So Jesus Ferreira had scored in the 92nd minute. And then Teenage scored in the 100th minute. That one was crazy. That one was a crazy, crazy game. And that was Hector Herrera's first introduction into MLS. So welcome into that. Now, I don't know which game you guys want to talk about, if there's one in specific that you want to talk about, but we do need to end with Joseph Martinez basically getting out his flamethrower and throwing everybody under the bus. And rightfully so, because they didn't play well against Austin, and they haven't been playing well for quite some time. Heath, I'll come to you first. Any of those rivalry games stand out for you? Because we have Jesus Ferreira scoring again, obviously a very important goal. He's continuing to be looking sharp and obviously stepping up in big moments. Then on the flip side, Walker Zimmerman, the whole team, Nashville, usually stout defensively, giving up four goals to just a very eager and opportunistic Charlotte FC. Not a good look for him in particular. Not that he was isolated in any of the goals, but still, when you're on a team that gives up four, that's never good. And then I should mention again that Philadelphia Union smoked DC United 7-0. Any of those games that stand out for you, Heath?
I mean, the Philadelphia Union one, shout out to the timeless Alejandro Bedoya for having a brace in that game. But more specifically, I was at the Galaxy LAFC game, which I was Friday night, and that was a fantastic matchup between the two of them. And again, another one of those places, if you're ever out in LA, it was unique because it's a Galaxy LAFC, but that atmosphere at Banc of California is an incredible experience. And then again, briefly wanted to just mention and give a shout out to Jesus Ferreira, who continues to, despite being an MLSer, perform really well, which I think is really important for us as we're starting to, again, head towards this latter part of the year. Somebody's going to either keep form or catch form that's going to severely impact our national team heading towards the World Cup. So for him to be able to do that in a big moment, in a big game locally, I think is shows that he's got some clutch ability to score goals in big moments.
Yeah, that's exciting to see. Chuck, any game stand out for you? I know your New England Revolution was a bit of a shocker for the referee. Yeah, I guess depending on who you speak with. I'm sure NYCFC fans were completely happy with that ref.
Oh, for sure. But it was a shock. It was a shocker. I mean, let's be real. I think one, the second penalty, I didn't see that from Henry Kessler. And then the third one, it wasn't a penalty. It was outside the box. Yes, it's a red card because he's the last man and denial of an obvious goal scoring opportunity, but it was outside the box. So yeah, it wasn't a great performance from the referee crew, but I think Charlotte being Nashville 4-1, that stood out to me in terms of a big win for Charlotte, who I think they're punching way above their weight. So they've been impressive, and Nashville has been disappointing on the opposite end of things. I'd also say, you know, Columbus winning at Chicago. I know Chicago's not great. They're actually very bad. But in terms of your DP signing coming in, Cucho Hernandez and scores that fantastic chip on his debut. I mean, talk about making the right investment and that investment showing that, hey, I'm for real. That was good to see.
Okay, so there were some fantastic performances. And if you haven't seen the highlights, go to MLSsoccer.com and go watch a few of the highlights. There's some fantastic goals and great games. But let's talk about Atlanta United losing 3-0 to Austin. Ultimately, what I've seen, I watched a portion of the game and obviously the highlights, but did a lot of reading and research on this because I'm just as curious as to why Atlanta United's fallen off so poorly. And a lot of it is maybe some of the signings, maybe some of the coaching hires that haven't really panned out. But Joseph Martinez, their star, said this after the game: "We play because we have to play, but in the training, some people don't have that energy. Some people don't know what they have to do, or they don't recognize or appreciate the jersey and what we've been doing for a long time. And probably that's the biggest problem. The injuries isn't the biggest problem." And I'm going to stop here because Atlanta have lost Ozzie Alonso, who I think gives them that bite in the middle of midfield, even though he's 36. You lost Brad Guzan, your starting goalkeeper. You lost Miles Robinson, your starting center back. You got Andrew Gutman. Left back is out with a hammy injury. You got another right back. Ronald Hernandez is out with a knee injury. You got Brooks Lennon, knee injuries out at right back. Emerson Hyman just went out again with a hamstring injury. So they especially when they're all goalkeepers or defenders or holding midfielders for the most part. So I think that's lending itself to some of the issues. But now let me continue with Joseph, who then says, "We play soccer and you can have injuries every day. And some people still think, oh, because we lost this guy, this guy. Well, we all make mistakes and we are professionals. We're not kids anymore. And if you come here, you have to know what you have to do. And if you don't come here for 100%, probably you don't have to choose to play at this club. That's the message for everyone. If you want to bring guys here, this is his shot at the front office. It's because they want to play here, and it's not because of business. And that's been happening for a long time. Thoughts on those comments from Joseph Martinez, Heath Pierce?
Yeah, I mean, that feels deeply personal of somebody who has been there during the best of times for Atlanta United. And now we're seeing a lack of that cohesion, right? When if you think about LA Galaxy, LAFC, Seattle, again, we've discussed this of like most well-known clubs in Major League Soccer. Atlanta became one of the first ones that even went further into Europe of like this club, this atmosphere, this thing that they're building here overnight. It's like this wildfire. And it came with like an instant gratification in terms of success. And I think now they're having to go through that foundation of building a club and a culture that is bigger than just that core group of players you first bought in. And they're going through that right now, and they've been going through that. And so he's certainly.
Wow, he admitted thought.
Yeah, he get away, Charlie. He gone.
So, Sully, your thoughts on Joseph Martinez, Charlie, and we'll let Heath circle back after you're done.
Yeah, Joseph, again, he's been out as well. It hasn't been 100% Joseph Martinez, and he's come back from the ACL, and it's been up and down. Like most players, it's going to take time till you get into a groove and figure out, okay, this is how I have to adapt and adjust my body. This, to me, is a shot at one of two players. And whether it's Luis Araujo or if you're talking about Thiago Almada, because those are the two top arrivals and they spend a great deal of money on. So it's one of those two that he's referring to in terms of don't make business decisions or have the players come here for business decisions, which means they're coming here for money. They're coming here for a big salary, and there's no drive and ambition and accountability. So that's what he's signaling, one. And two, you talk about the culture of the club. They had that when they had Jeff Lorenz, when they had Michael Parkhurst, they had Brad Guzan. The three of them, you could get a good sense of what this club's about on top of Tata Martino, who was able to bring Miguel Amarone, who was able to bring Joseph Martinez and really create this club.
And establish an identity. Right. They don't have an identity right now. I think that's part of the biggest issue. And I like Gonzalo Pineda as a coach. I was really excited. But something's I get the sense, and I want to get your thoughts, Charlie, and we'll let you go because I know you have a manicure pedicure appointment. I feel like he's too nice, Gonzalo Pineda. That's the vibe that I get. He was an assistant coach for a long time, and when you're the assistant, sometimes you have maybe too much nice guy vibes because that's been your role for so long because you're never the head guy.
Yes, and you also have Rob Valentino there, who has been with Atlanta United for some time. I wouldn't say it's because of the nice guy approach, because he has tactics, he has a plan, and it's over a long term because he expects to be there for a long time. This was never about immediate results. And Miles Robinson, that's the big loss. This is a starting U.S. men's national team center back and arguably the best. Tata Martino gave this club a great start into the league. And once he goes, you don't necessarily marry yourself to his style of play. Now, there are some players who stay and there's that turnover moment, but you have to continue to build. And Joseph Martinez goes down. You kind of throw that season away. You make the hire of Pineda because he showed real promise at the end of last year to get them to be competitive at the end, to challenge for a playoff spot. And I think this year, a number of injuries, and I think the level of expectation has dropped for Atlanta United. And that's what's really tough for a player like Joseph Martinez, because you're always competing to be the best and the top and pushing for MVP and Golden Boot honors. And that's just not the reality of the situation right now. So
now he's threatening that he might leave after his next year. Would be a big loss for Atlanta.
Would you consider trading Joseph Martinez in the league?
To LAFC, baby. Joseph Martinez.
I don't think you're going to ever get the same. Yeah, you're never going to get the same Joseph Martinez that you had before, right? We've seen that. He could get to that, but it takes time. It's not just like, okay, knee feels better. Now we've got our you know. And obviously there was a little bit of that. Joseph Martinez was set to break the record for scoring against more teams than anybody in history. And, you know, he's team's not in great form and he's a little bit heated about that sort of stuff. But again, the problem with teams that come into the league and have instant success is that sometimes it's the tip of the iceberg and you don't know what's underneath it. You don't know the foundation that it's built on. And like Charlie said, they had good leadership in that when they built that team. But that doesn't mean that the club has a good foundation of culture and leadership. You've got to build that over time. You've got to build that through accountability. You got to build that through good times. But more importantly, you got to build that through bad times. And they're going through that now. And I think sometimes that's the problem when you come in, you get the right group together. And LAFC, you're going through the same thing. And with Steve Cherundolo is doing a good job of trying to build, like, what's our actual style of play that goes beyond the coach? So get rid of Steve Cherundolo. Who's coming in now that helps to develop this club into the right direction, sign the right players? Because otherwise you fall into that vicious cycle of MLS. New coach comes, he wants new players, new style of play, new culture, new everything. And then you see a lot of these clubs that have never been able to actually build a foundation for, you know, the club being bigger than anything or anyone.
Sounds like Heath is blaming the Atlanta front office in this one. I'm just throwing that out there, everybody. Charlie, we're going to let you go. I hope you get a massage with your manicure pedicure today. Great to see you as always. Me and Heath will finish the show in your honor, and we'll take the final thoughts because your final thoughts usually last about 10 minutes.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Chuck Wagon is out. All right, Heath, me and you kind of finishing this up. I actually just want to talk about the Atlanta front office. Clearly there was something put in place and it seems like they've gotten away from that with some poor signings. Is it simply down to that? Because when I think about Atlanta United, when I watch them play, they went from a collection of a team that had an identity. You knew how they wanted to move. You knew how they wanted to have success, to a team that seems very individualistic and a collection of players that are all kind of doing the same things. And I don't know if they all, you know, and they have had some significant injuries. That has to be said because it is influencing what's happening. But they still seem to be lacking something that even in bad times, they're not figuring out or solving problems or having enough of that grit to work through the adversity. And so how much of the front office do you think has to take some responsibility for this?
Well, like they moved Jurgen Damm and they should be accountable. But it's extremely hard to be in a situation where you've got a number of injured players and the injury bug hits your club, because then you're constantly stuck between, like, I've got these expensive players. Where's my salary cap at? Do I go and sign new players? What's the next player coming in? And you're under the attention of being a big club like Atlanta United FCR. And so it's tough. And also, Jimmy, it's natural, right? It's human nature to think that when you get the hot hand that you're just going to continue to have it. I remember going back to when you and I were at Chivas from year one to year two that I was there before I got traded away. Year two came in and it was like 9 new guys came from South America and it changed the whole dynamic of the club, right? We were maybe, and you know, you obviously had the injury, so you were out most of that first season together, but we were probably 2 or 3 pieces off of being a playoff team, right? We played really good soccer. We had a good style of play. We couldn't score goals, but overall we ended up becoming a pretty good team. And then all of a sudden the whole dynamic shifted, right? X amount of players, new cliques forming in the locker room, different demands, different cultures, different understandings of the game, styles of play. Now you're sort of forced to say, okay, I'm a coach. I'm in the second year of my deal, or now I'm feeling the pressure. Now we're going to play with what I got versus how I want to play. And so you take that's on the field. And then you go to front office and you start going like, man, maybe we got a few of those wrong. And you've also got to say, well, we got to give them time to develop because we've got foreign players and they've got to, you know, sort of take time. And so it's just a very difficult thing that people think is easy to go from one year to the next. That's why these dynasties and people talk about around Europe and clubs like Manchester United have had this run. And then it's been a decade since they've had that same run, because it's not easy. And it's a challenge, and it's a mix of things, tangible and intangible, that you can't always measure. And so I think they're going through that right now for what I think is an extended period of their first time. And it's hard to climb out of that. Now the players are frustrated for Joseph Martinez, who had it really good since he got there on loan, to then being a big star player, an injury to him. And so,
and had some players. They just like really complimented Joseph Martinez before you moved on to your next thought. Like Miguel Almiron, obviously a perfect compliment to the skill set. And it feels like they're not building the team in the same way. But the one thing I wanted to add with what you're saying and that insight from Chivas USA days is apt, because it is hard to build something, even though you might have all the pieces on paper and you have these bright coaches that have a great style, maybe you're not executing. Maybe you don't have everything you need on the field to make that happen. You have some significant injuries and then everything kind of falls apart. And how do you paper over the cracks? I think the issue for Atlanta, and I'm going to speak for some Atlanta United fans here, and as a fan myself of the teams that I support, if you don't see the basic hustle, like the things that you do have control over, you can't control injuries, which to Joseph Martinez's point, but that team can still go out there and fight and try to win second balls, right? And try to do these little things and work together. And if one guy gets beat, there's going to be some pride and I'm going to make sure I cover for that guy. And when you don't see those things, that's where I think you start to lose the fans, because those are just basic expectations that every time you put on the shirt of your club, you go out there and put your best foot forward and give everything that you have. And if you don't see that, that is where things start to get a little dicey. And I think that's ultimately what Joseph Martinez is speaking about and why that frustration starts to seep into the fans, who not only were spoiled right off the bat from Atlanta United's perspective, but because there's just, they're missing that one key component.
You agree? I agree. I mean, it comes down to, again, you have different types of leaders in a team, right? Who are your leaders, and who's some lead by example, some lead verbally, some lead in pure talent, and the culture of that team starts to get a little bit rocky. And it's easy to have leaders when your team is winning everything and your team is in great form. It's harder when times are tough that somebody's going to be able to take that accountability and go.
Okay. So we're almost done with the show, but I do want to let everybody know that on Thursday, our very own Hollywood Heath Pierce is going to be as Hollywood as ever and have a sit-down interview with Chelsea's Mason Mount, which is very, very exciting. So I assume you're going to pepper him with a whole bunch of U.S. men's national team questions. Is that how it's going to work, Heath? And can you get some insight about Christian Pulisic? The guy seems pretty guarded about, you know, off the field stuff. And I'd kind of like to know a little bit more. I assume Mason Mount, who's known him for a long time, has got some of that dirt. I mean, what kind of questions do you have ready for us, Heath? And if anybody has questions that you want Heath to ask Mason Mount, put those in the comments right now, or actually better yet, hit us up on Twitter, ISWTPod, and give us a follow there, and then let Heath tag all of us and let Heath, what kind of questions you want him to ask Mason Mount. Are you nervous, Hollywood? Or are you just so Hollywood you don't get nervous for these types of things anymore?
No, it's funny. Like it's usually because I feel like I'm usually one degree removed from most players that I'm not nervous. But when it's somebody that I have no real, like, I don't know Christian Pulisic well, therefore I definitely don't know Mason Mount, you know, I'm curious to see, like, you kind of, you know, Jimmy, you got to sort of build the vibe and like kind of maybe throw a zinger at him once to just kind of tear that wall down and be like, hey, peer to peer. And so I've got we're going to put together a lot of good questions talking about Champions League. We're going to talk about England in the World Cup. We're going to talk about Christian Pulisic, U.S. national team, England national team, and all those things. And would love for everybody to submit a few questions, because we'd love to throw in a few user submitted questions just to kind of throw at him.
Yeah, of course. Can you bet him that if England loses to the U.S. in the World Cup, that he's got to call it soccer for at least a year? Can you put that in there somewhere?
He's got to wear a Christian Pulisic jersey and call it soccer for a year.
Yes, I think that has to happen. He owes us that, because I think that would be pretty cool. Well, any final thoughts, Heath Pierce, before you do your Mason Mount interview on Thursday? Anything from MLS or anything we discussed? What do you got for us today?
No, my final thought is that, and I could be wrong on this, but I've just got this flashback of saying the wrong name that I thought I may have said Marcus Rashford earlier in the episode about being touted for LAFC and Galaxy instead of it being Jesse Lingard. I may have said Lingard the right, I may have been
Lingard.
Correct, but
you said Lingard.
Okay. Yeah, I was a little bit worried about that. And, you know, like there, our audience holds us to a certain standard, Jimmy, as you know,
as they should,
that there are people that watch it to see us mess up, watch the show, which I love too. Like, I love anybody who's supporting the show for whatever reasons. And so I just wanted to make sure I clarified that in case it was wrong. But other than that, no more thoughts. How about you?
No, Marcus Rashford was training in LA recently, so I can understand why you maybe made that link. I don't know if you knew that he was there or not, but I know he's been going around doing his tour of the U.S. I think on behalf of Nike. So I know he was in L.A. for a brief period of time. But no, that's it. I got no other final thoughts. It's been a great show. As always, we appreciate your support. So on behalf of producer Dez, producer Alex, Mr. Manicure Pedicure himself, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, Hollywood Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Conrad saying thank you for listening and watching in Soccer We Trust. And we will see you on Thursday with just Heath and just Mason Mount. And it's going to be fantastic. And then you see the rest of us on Friday. We'll see you then. Later.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.